Welcome to Nattering with the Knights, Nord Anglia International School Hong Kong's PE department, talking about sport, physical activity, health, and a host of other topics.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Nattering with the Knights. This is episode number 14, and today we are joined by Andy Young, Great Britain athletics coach, who's interviewed expertly by Mr. Kate. They talk through some of his high-calibre athletes, including some athletes who made it to Olympic finals. He also shares some stories about one of Britain's most famous athletes, Mo Farah, and a certain special somebody from the royal family. This is not an episode to be missed, so get the earphones in, get up and get active, and enjoy.
Okay, welcome to our next episode of Nattering with the Knights podcast. Today we sit down with Andrew Young, one of the top, if not the top, Great British athletics coaches. Andy was awarded the Scottish Athletics Performance Coach of the Year in 2016, 2018 and 2020. He coaches Laura Muir and Gemma Rickey, two of Great Britain's most leading athletes, and his athletes have placed in the final of the Olympic Games, World Championships and have a multitude of medals at European level. Welcome, Andy.
Afternoon, or perhaps evening over there.
Yes, so how are you today?
I'm currently in Dubai looking out over a harbour. A little bit of clouds today, it's a bit unusual for Dubai, and I'm weighing up going for a run myself in a little while.
Nice, nice. It sounds like a tough life you have there, actually, yes.
It certainly could be worse, but there again, I think your climate in Hong Kong is pretty nice too.
Okay, to sort of let our listeners know the sort of background here, or the link between us, I think maybe about 30 years ago, if I think right, I went to secondary school with you. That would have been maybe 1990 when we were in S1 back in Glasgow in Scotland. But despite knowing you very well, I researched you now, you know, being a famous coach in Great Britain, and I was trying to look for your Wikipedia page, but there was nothing there.
Is there not? No. I haven't looked myself, so I didn't know that.
No, lots of articles on the British Broadcasting Corporation, the BBC, articles about athletics. So would you say, what percentage of the UK population do you think would know you?
Oh, that's quite an odd one. I think if you're talking the athletics community or the track and field community, then a lot. But there's an element of I'm not quite as much in the foreground. The athletes tend to take the lion's share of attention, and okay. That's fine. But certainly within the track and field community and within the coaching community, I think even within the international coaching community globally, I'd be reasonably well known.
Excellent. Okay. Well, I know you're saying it's not about you being in the limelight, but I'd still like our listeners to know about your own background. You know how you came to be where you are today. Going right back to maybe the time that we met at school. What was your sporting background, and then how you became involved in athletics and what happened after that? If you could maybe tell us a wee bit about that, please.
Yeah, I mean, probably actually, even I got into athletics even before I met you at secondary school. I think back then you had to be 9 years old before you could join an athletics club. So near enough on my 9th birthday, straight down to the local athletics club in Glasgow and joined. And at that point, I think I wanted to be a sprinter, but okay. It was kind of a distance running club. So basically, you could sprint a bit, but go out and do 2 miles type thing around the block. Right. So it was almost turned into a middle distance runner, a long distance runner by default. So I did that at the club. I was somewhat successful club type runner. And then, went to school, met yourself at secondary school. We had success at like Scottish schools, championships, British schools, things like that. Obviously, we went to the world schools.
How did you go on in that? I'm not sure.
I won the World Schools back in Nicosia in Cyprus in 1994, over 800 metres. And yeah, we're on to compete Great Britain Junior, under 23 level, Scottish Senior and things. Never quite made it onto the big time globally, but competed internationally for a number of years. So been in the athletics game, so to speak, if I give away my age there, I've actually told you the number of years, but since I was 9 years old, so quite a long time.
Okay, excellent. Good. And you ended up going to university, if I remember right, in America?
First of all, I did a degree in Loughborough, Loughborough University. It was a good place for athletics. This is back before, you know, the sort of many sports scholarships and things in the UK. But Loughborough was a hub of sport, where many of the famous sportsmen and women went to do their university and carry on with athletics or other sports. So I did my undergraduate degree there. And then, I went and did a master's degree out in America. Had a scholarship. I had a number of years eligibility left to compete. So I had 1 year's eligibility left to compete. And I went out to a place in Louisiana, near Texas, and started a master's degree there. And actually ended up, finished it and got an MBA out there. So yeah, I was out there competing for a year for the university and stuff, and that was great fun. Enjoyed that. It was kind of a little bit different to what I'd experienced back home. We were sort of traveling somewhere to race every week type thing, especially if you did cross country and you did track. But it was great. It was almost like being a professional sportsman or woman. You know, you had your scholarships, which gave you your money for meals and accommodation things. You got to travel, see all over the country, and got to compete, which is, you know, was good fun too. So yeah, I enjoyed that experience. That was certainly sort of a bit different, and certainly one I definitely enjoyed.
And do you think that experience benefited you as a coach that later on in life as well then?
Probably did, it gave you sort of some slightly different perspectives on it. It probably is, as you grow up in the UK or Europe, you know, you're going to be doing it as an amateur in essence, whereas over there you got to see probably not as much athletics, but you got to see all the sports working as, you know, they were amateur because they were at college, but they were basically training like professional sportsmen and women, harder than some of the sportsmen and women training, you know, professional sports back in Europe and beyond. So yeah, it was great to see, you know, the level of the interest in sport that was out there and the community type interest where the whole community bought into the local university or college and, you know, got right behind that. So you have, you know, big crowds for amateur athletics. I remember going to an event called the Texas Relays, which is primarily a college and high school event in Austin, Texas. And over about 3 days, they have a number of days competition for high schools and colleges and universities. But also alongside that, they have a small professional element in it where some of the world's best athletes you know, coming to compete, some of the sprinters and things, maybe hurdlers at this event. But the irony is that maybe you'd 50,000 people come to watch this college event over the next, you know, over 3 days. Wow. But they weren't actually coming to see these professionals. It turns out some of them didn't even know who they were.
All right.
They came to see their actual college and university and schools compete. And that was the bit they were actually interested in. So actually, you know, probably quite possibly the majority of people didn't know who the stars were. But still, they were turning out, you know, up to about 50,000 or so over the space of 3 days to watch athletics. So yeah, it was a different experience and certainly an enjoyable one.
Wow, that's excellent. So you spent a lot of time then obviously in America, and just linking into that, what other places around the world then? Obviously, your job now as a coach, an international coach, must take you around the world. What sort of places then? Could you tell our listeners, like where you go for your training or competitions, what would be a sort of typical year for you, like how many countries you would visit?
So it's certainly quite fortunate in this, you know, working with, you know, distance athletes, all the best athletes in the world, and working with the Great Britain team and things. We do certainly get to travel a lot. It's one of the big perks of the job. And if any of your listeners have been to Scotland and have seen the climate there or experienced the climate there, they'll know that escaping that climate to actually see some sunshine is a plus point. So yeah, no, certainly athletics has taken it all over the world. I mean, in recent years, I've been to Rio, the Olympics in 2016. Where else? Beijing for the World Championships in 2015. We were in Japan preparing for the World Championships for a while in that same year. I've ticked off probably most of the countries in Europe. And was in Moscow for the 2013 World Championships and spent a fair bit of time in the States. And again, with distance runners, they tend to do some altitude training. So that's where you're training, you know, at an altitude above 1,600 metres. You go and live and train there for a while because it has performance benefits when you return to race at sea level. So again, obviously, if you're in the winter of that particular hemisphere, above 1,600 metres, there's often snow. So we have to look for places above 1,600 metres, 2,000 metres in the hemisphere summer. So this past winter, I've been in South Africa, which is quite often down there in December and January, up towards Johannesburg in the High Veld. There's a whole region that's up, you know, about a mile high, about 1,600 metres high, so I spent a fair bit of time there. We were altitude training before in a place, Gifu in Japan, Flagstaff in America, just outside Los Angeles as well. So, and then there's a couple of places in Europe we go altitude training as well. So yeah, certainly quite fortunate, seeing, you know, probably almost more of the world than most people would see in their lifetime within a short span of time. But yeah, certainly one of the perks of the job, so to speak, getting to take these opportunities and see different parts and different cultures of the world.
That sounds like a great experience, yes. So what would a typical week be then for, like, for you and your athletes, or maybe a typical day, to give us a bit of background to sort of delve into professional sport?
Yeah, so I mean, in terms of like the training the athletes would do, so I probably work more at the lower ends as in terms of quantity, but higher quality. So we don't do a massive, massive bulk of training, but what we do is probably higher quality than a lot of others. And so the girls would typically train 6 days a week, of which on a Tuesday they basically are doing training about three times during the day, or doing three different training activities. Likewise, on a Thursday, do a couple of training activities. The other days are single days, but when I'm saying a single training day, that might involve, you know, running 13 miles, or, you know, on the Sunday. So yeah, so for them, but then on top of that, they've got things like physio, they've got exercises to be doing, you know, most days, developing, you know, various muscles and strengthening things that the physio or the strength and conditioning might have given them. So yeah, a typical day for an athlete might be they get, a Thursday, they get up, do the first run of the day, or warm up a little bit, do the first run of the day, they might do their exercises or maybe wait till the afternoon run, then get some, you know, some food, maybe not do too much, then later on, maybe 4 or 5 in the afternoon, then go for a second run. Before that, probably either do, might do a little bit in the gym exercises or do some exercises in the house. At the moment, they would be getting physio on a Thursday, actually, between the two runs. So after they're back for the first run, they might get a bit of food, go to the physio, get an hour's physio or massage treatment, then do a bit more gym or exercises, go for a run, cook their dinner, might watch a bit of TV, and then off to bed. And that's, it's not the most, always the most exciting life. You're challenging a lot of energy into your workouts, etc. So that can kind of leave you tired. But again, the athletes like me get to see, travel the world, run in front of huge crowds and amazing stadiums and things. So yeah, it's hard work. It's not, you know, it's a full-time job in essence, but it's, yeah, it's a good life too.
Well, I was just going to say there, don't give away obviously too many of your top tips. I'm sure you've some of your rivals, or your rival coaches and athletes, are watching this, but you said there that one of the things was that you focus on quality rather than quantity.
Yeah, so, I mean, we don't do massive, massive mileage. Distance runners, you know, primarily middle distance, longest runners, a coach. And we don't do maybe as many miles per week or as many kilometres per week as, you know, some of the other athletes. But what we do tend to do is we do all of the workout we do it faster. So whereas they might be doing some slow mileage or slow kilometres, etc., as part of training, slow runs, we tend not to do them. We tend to do all our runs, you know, that bit faster. So there's less overall quantity, possibly less mileage, less kilometres, but the mileage kilometres we do tend to be faster. So it's that kind of quality over quantity approach that we're kind of using.
Okay, okay. And how many athletes have you got that are you in charge of just now?
Will it be bad if I say I don't know?
Right, okay, no. So you give advice to some athletes?
I've probably got... So at the moment with me in Dubai, I've got five of my international athletes that are sort of, you know, competing at Great Britain and above level. Back home, I've probably got another four or five that are sort of about junior international level or junior national medal type level, getting in around that. So maybe there are three to five of them. And then a few more that are more club runners nowadays, maybe picked up medals at a national level and stuff when they were younger. So yeah, somewhere sort of 10 to 16. We have different people have different lifestyles, etc. So some of the older ones obviously will now be in jobs. One's a doctor, so he can't come that often. He's in ADE at the moment, so again, it depends on schedules and things. So whereas some of the students, you know, a lot of them are students, can come more often, and then you've got a few that are sort of full-time professional athletes. So it kind of varies how many we get to see each week and stuff. But yeah, sort of 10 to 16 if I'm back in Glasgow with the full group.
Okay, it certainly keep you busy then, that you've got lots to do and lots of people to look after. I was going to ask you a question actually about in terms of what you thought about the influence that you have on your athletes. Like, obviously, well, I don't know, I'm just comparing maybe you.
Not dietary, obviously.
No.
it's not copying my dietary requirements. I take on board.
Oh, you're still keeping fit, aren't you? You're still working hard yourself.
Well, I'm trying to do a bit of running, but I'm certainly not the lean athlete I once was.
No, I was going to ask you about just in terms of the influence you have. Like, I think my personal opinion is you would have more of an influence on your athletes because it's you sort of one-on-one with the athlete, whereas I think, you know, in a team sport, a manager or a coach has got, you know, lots of different people and lots of different variables. So in a way that, you know, if you've got to the top of your game as an international athletics coach, you must have a lot of influence over your athletes. I mean, what do you think about that?
I mean, when you're talking about team sports, yeah, certainly in a sport where it's, you know, like athletics or, you know, another sport where it's an individual rather than a team sport, you probably, yeah, you do have much more influence probably even on a coaching level. You know, if you're coaching a team, there's probably you're not actually probably working that much one-on-one, or quite often not really developing the individual quite the same way. Whereas, you know, individual sports, you know, like maybe tennis or athletics, etc., then yeah, it's much more intense, and you can actually probably have a much bigger influence on developing on the athlete and their, you know, skill set and abilities. So yeah, at that point it could be sort of more rewarding. You can sort of see the impacts you have and the benefits you can bring and the changes you can bring. They're probably on and off the track. So yeah, it's a little bit different to a team sport. And yeah, I'm sure you do, you know, we do have in these situations, you know, more influence than, yeah, you would as a team, as you were saying.
Sure. What about your greatest achievements then as a coach? What would you say your greatest achievements have been so far, obviously?
It's kind of difficult because sometimes the biggest achievements aren't necessarily the highest performances. Sometimes where if an athlete's maybe been injured or wasn't quite ready, and you to sort of, you know, work some training magic to get them ready to win a particular race. I think if I go back to 2018, Laura won the European Championships, but to me that was, it was never in doubt. She was, you know, it was sort of hers to lose. But the Diamond League final, you know, she sort of, that year is almost like the World Championship final, because there isn't a particular World Championships. The Diamond League final, you know, the culmination of the athletic circuit, was a much harder race to win. And the shape, probably, she wasn't in probably amazing shape about 4 or 6 weeks out, not quite as good a shape as I'd have liked to have been in. And I wasn't necessarily sure then that she was, you know, ready to win it. So it's actually to develop, to get the training right, etc., to bring her into a place where she did actually win the, and look great at the Diamond League final about 6 weeks later in Brussels or Zurich, wherever it was that year. You know, that was, you know, one of my bigger achievements. But equally, you know, bringing an athlete from sort of nowhere and development to the world's, you know, basically world number one, as Laura was the other year there when the rankings first came out, for a good while, and certainly, you know, right up at the very top in the world for a number of years now, that's probably, yeah, you know, one of the proudest moments, yeah. But there's not, and then again, I enjoyed, certainly when Laura broke the British record for the first time, that was a massive one to me. Seeing the likes of how Gemma has now developed into, you know, an amazing 100 metre runner, still at a young age, and is in a position where she could be, you know, the very top of the world for years and years to come. Yeah, it's not necessarily one instant moment I would pin down as my, off the top of my head, that, you know, spring to my mind right away as my, you know, ultimate. But there's also quite a few there that I'm quite proud of and I think are, you know, good achievements.
So possibly then the greatest achievements are still to come then. Like, hopefully, you know, with the Olympics supposedly taking place this year, I mean, what are your hopes for your athletes for the Olympics if it goes ahead and obviously they make it to there?
Yeah, you know, no, certainly I think both athletes are now in the shout for a medal, and I think they would be possibly, you know, a little bit disappointed they didn't come away with a medal. So very much to both of them, looking for the both of them to chase a medal in as nice a colour as possible. I won't give you a particular colour, but it's always good to
see. Yeah, I'm just saying, just imagine, you know, our listeners, to, like, you know, having an Olympic medal, just what an achievement that would be. And obviously you and your athletes have got a chance of getting that, hopefully, you know, this year or sometime in the future.
Yeah, I mean, you could never, especially, it depends, what, certainly in a sport like athletics, track and field, you know, it's a global sport. That's like, you know, when you go to the Olympics, it is the premier sport in essence. But it's also the sport that the whole world more or less participates in and can relate to. Because wherever you are in the world, you know, you can go for a run. You can run and see how high you can jump up a wall or a tree, or if you've got a bit of sand, how far you can jump in the sand or in the dirt, etc. And, you know, many people, you know, do, you know, from all corners of the globe, do athletics at school and things, have a school sports. So it's the one, you know, it's the sport that almost anyone anywhere in the world can do in some way or form, which makes it probably about the hardest medal to win at the Olympic Games. Sure. Because it's the one, you know, more nations than any other nation, I think, compete in athletics at the Olympics, etc. So, yeah, particularly in that one, you know, if you win a medal at that, you can really sort of pat yourself on the back and then some, and it is a remarkable achievement, because it is probably about the hardest one to win at the Olympics. And, you know, you really are to beat, how many people have got in the world now? About 5 billion type thing, you know, to get to the top of that tree. Yeah, it's a great achievement. So even, yeah, to be in the running for it's fantastic and exciting. But to actually deliver it, a medal would be, you know, would be even better.
Exactly. Definitely. Okay, I'm conscious, obviously, I think I could probably sit and chat to you all day, but I'm conscious I can't take up too much of your time. I know you're a busy man. What would be your top tips for any of our pupils or students at the school who aspire to be a professional athlete? What would you recommend for them?
It's actually nothing desperately exciting, except you've got to have drive from within, especially in an individual sport. You know, in essence, no one can do it for you. And you've got to be dedicated and work hard day in and day out. It's not something most of the people that get to the very top in the sports at the Olympics, you know, it's basically all year round training. It's not like you train for a season or dip in and dip out. And it's looking at how I can improve the different aspects of the sport I do and trying to improve that week in, week out, week in, week out. And it might not always be the same thing you're focusing on, but it's that drive and determination week in, week out, year in, year out, you know, that can help you improve. And yeah, it's certainly in sport like athletics, there's not many easy ways to the top other than, you know, real hard work and determination. And if you put that together with a bit of talent over enough years, then that can deliver exciting things.
I suppose that's the bit when somebody watches the Olympics and say they watch Laura or Gemma in the 800 and the 1500, they only see 2 or 4 minutes, you know, they're seeing of the race there, but they don't see all the hard work they put in behind everything there.
So, yeah. You know, some really, I mean, yeah, certainly in sports like individuals, or many of the sports we see, you know, away from the team sports, you only get to see a glimpse of them maybe half a dozen times or so, 10 times a year, or as you say, small 2-3 minute segments. But to deliver that, they're actually out training, you know, maybe 48 weeks of the year, you know, 6 days a week, you know, sometimes twice a day, you know, year in, year out, year in, year out. So, yeah, what culminates in what looks like a short performance is actually the build-up of an awful lot of work, you know, throughout the year and years.
Sure. Okay, well, I'm going to finish off here, Andy, if you don't mind, with a quickfire round. You ready for this? This is going to be a common theme in our podcast.
Well, I can't promise it'll be quite as quick as my athletes, but yeah, go for it.
Okay, first question then. Favourite food?
Indian
food.
Curry.
Okay. Nice curry. Interesting fact or darkest secret?
Interesting fact. I'll try to come up with an interesting fact. Give me a hint. Yeah, you've known me for many years, Mr. Pitt.
Had lunch with anybody famous?
Oh yes, of course. I suppose I had lunch with the Queen.
Lunch with the Queen. Yeah,
Queen of Britain. Yeah, a number of years ago.
Come back to that one. Favorite holiday destination?
That's a difficult one too. I like to go back to Louisiana and Texas, where I was, you know, I did my university. I like to also go anywhere sunny, and I also like to ski. I like to go lots of places that aren't Scotland.
Scotland?
anywhere that's warmer than Scotland.
Anywhere that's warmer than Scotland, okay.
Sunnier.
Good answer. Favourite gadget?
Ooh, television.
TV, okay. Favourite book?
SkyBots. Oh, these are big. The only books I've really read like Harry Potter, so I don't know.
Well, that's good. I'm sure lots of our listeners have read Harry Potter too. Most famous person you've met, apart from the Queen?
I've met most of the famous athletes of the world. So if there's a famous athlete, you could probably say I've met them.
Okay.
Track and field-wise, so.
Ever driven a car with any famous athletes in the back and crashed it at all? No.
Are you referring back to the time I maybe scraped the car with Mo Farah in it on a mountain top in Japan? That's a possibility.
Yeah. Well, he's pretty famous, I think, Mo Farah. I think lots of our listeners would have heard of him. Okay, if you were an animal, which animal would you be?
I'm not very quick at this quick fire round. What's a slow one? A sloth?
A sloth, okay. I'll take that. If you could get yourself anything at all in the world, what would it be?
I'm not allowed to say a model, am I?
No.
I don't know, but right now I'd like... my next big purchase I quite like is... I'd like to get for myself as a big 80-inch television.
Another TV, okay. Well, it's a TV. Right, biggest economical tip of 2021. I mean, I think your university degree was in economics, wasn't it? Or was an element of your course?
Economics accounts. Yeah. Spend less money in coffee and save it in shares or something.
Okay, good tip. And the last one then, so maybe in 60 seconds, could you try to...
I love it now.
Yeah. Biggest life lesson you can share in under 60 seconds for our listeners. I'm going to give you the 60 seconds here. I'll give you a wee bit of time. Ready? Okay, go.
Whoa. I don't know about biggest life lesson, but probably... this clock will be ticking down. I think it's one good life lesson is that you're probably learning all the time, and even you think you might know it all by 18 or 20 or 22 or 2030, but even when those that are into their 40s, 50s, 60s, especially in the sporting world, are still, I'm not in my 60s to clarify, are still learning lots of things and making adaptions to the training, etc., or the coaching that they do. So maybe not the biggest, but one good life lesson is to always actually keep learning and realise there's more information to be absorbed.
Fantastic. That's good. That's the minute up now. Excellent.
That's the only thing I managed on time.
Yeah, that's you. All questions done. Some fantastic answers there. But I have to go back to the one that you couldn't even remember, this one, but having lunch with the Queen. Could you tell us a wee bit about that?
Yeah, back.
Actual Queen.
Yeah. So back in about the 1999, which of course many of your pupils probably weren't even born, I'm now realising. I had an invite to come through the post saying, would you like to come to a banquet attended by the Queen at the National Stadium in Scotland, Hampden Park. I didn't give any more details. Of course, I said yes. But then someone phoned up the week before and said, would you mind sitting next to the Queen? And I thought, I thought it was perhaps a joke at first. And certainly I thought, well, maybe I'll be on the same, head table of a big, long banquet table type thing. But when I actually got there and walked into the room, there was a small round table, in the banquet hall with little name cards, and there was my name. And then I'm looking at the next name card next to me, and of course, there it was. The Queen's. So right enough, I was sitting, and it was a small table. It wasn't the biggest. A lot of people around this table, so we were basically bumping elbows for an hour. But I struck up a bit of conversation, and we ended up chatting for about 40 minutes.
Superb.
So it's a bit of a surreal one, a bit of a strange one. But yeah, many years ago, I had lunch with the Queen.
Well, what a way to finish the podcast. What a story. No, I must say to you, Andy, I know that you are, I mentioned already, a busy man with all your coaching, and I really appreciate you spending some time to chat with us. I don't know if we've done it justice in terms of getting a lot of knowledge and advice, but you've really come across well and given us lots of tips for our pupils and things to do with athletics, advice for life as well. So I really appreciate your time, Andy. Thank you.
Alrighty, and yep, I'm about to now nip off to take the girls for a run, and I think I better do one myself while they're out clocking in some miles, so I'll do a few miles or so too.
Okay. Enjoy it then, Andy. Thanks a lot.
Cheers.
Cheers then, thank you.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Nattering with the Knights. If you want to make sure that you don't miss any future episodes, then please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please reach out to your PE teacher if you have any feedback or ideas about topics you would like to see and hear about in the future. In the meantime, have a great week, and we will see you next time.